Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning if you are just joining us. You missed an interesting first hour, if I do say so myself. I thought it was quite a busy one too. 086 60 25,000, the WhatsApp and text line remains open for you. Thank you so much to all of you using it. A caller says, if you are on minimum wages, you can just about to afford 2 pints per hour. That's the big issue with pubs now. People can't afford to drink, and there is the tipping point for some. Can't understand why pubs are charging 4 and 5 euros for a bottle of zero beer. Surely, if somebody's driving people to a pub for a drink, the driver shouldn't have to pay 5 euro for a bottle of non-alcohol. It's crazy. I hope people stop going to pubs. Well, I'm not really sure how much it costs them or how much profit they're making on it, but I think a lot of people who drink are actually just drinking that now if they choose not to drink on a night out. So they could be losing revenue there. How can the government back the pub business in this county when the news headlines today show the abuse of alcohol highest in the country? Well, then, if you wanted to have that debate, and maybe, you see, this is what we don't do, is debate enough on you know, real issues that we have control over. You could argue that maybe post-COVID, that people have changed their drinking habits, that they are drinking at home, whereby you pour yourself a drink. And, you know, it's not a single, it's not a double, it could be a treble, or maybe, you know, you've gotten to a habit of opening one or two bottles of wine a night that maybe normally you reserved for one night out in the pub. So we also have to talk about how we're consuming alcohol and how that might have changed and how that might be influencing other figures. Ask Brian, does ChatGPT reference the sources like is required for any third level paper assignment? Very important. No, you simply... in ChatGPT, you give it the better the description, the better the output. You tell it what you want to write. It could be a homily, could be a poem, it could be a song, it could be anything. And you give it some pointers as to what it's about, what emotions or what points you're trying to express or get along or get across, and it'll do it for you. And there is some software that can pick out if ChatGPT has been used, but it's evolving all of the time. It's not the only one. Facebook, Twitter X, and others are also developing theirs. Google, Microsoft. It's going to be harder and harder for technology to pick out what is artificially created and what is not, and there's certainly no reference. But I understand what you're saying. I believe it. You have to sort of, if you do quote stuff, you have to put markers in, but maybe you can also instruct ChatGPT to do that for you as well. So if using quotes, please, and so on and so forth, it is that intelligent and it's instant. Hi, Greg. Was very nervous going for the driving test. Someone gave me a tablet that's used to calm Parkinson's person. Well, I went and the tablet put me, could hardly talk, could hardly answer. I felt, well, firstly, never take a tablet off someone and take it. I hope, well, I presume this was some time ago. But that's not, there's just nothing good about that situation. I'm sorry. There's just no, out from that other than don't ever, that's just not advisable at all. Good morning. Just wondering, is it mandatory for healthcare staff in nursing homes to continue getting the COVID vaccine, or can it be the person's choice? I've heard of no compulsion in terms of the vaccine or any new boosters or what have you. If anyone out there in that sector has any insight into that, let us know. I don't think there's any appetite for it or any desire to implement it either, but I could be wrong. If you work in that area, please let us know. I love all animals is in the Bible. Do not harm them or deprive them of happiness or work against God's will. I do not agree with the public being told not to feed the seagulls. Nature is so lovely and the birds is all we have left and we need to look after it. Yeah, I suppose there is a thing, though, that you have to be careful that you're not interrupting nature or interfering with nature and feeding seagulls and altering their usual flight and eating habits and drawing them to a different location. Maybe that's not God's will either. I don't know. Just to remind you, by the way, that on the show on Friday, if you were listening, and I'm sure you were, €2,500 was given away. It was the first tranche of cash as part of Highland Radio's mega summer cash draw. Well, there's much more. Another $2,500 on Friday, another $2,500 after that, and then 10th and another, and then 10 grand. Anyway, there's 20 grand in total up for grabs. 2.5 already been given away. You can buy a ticket now at Highland for Highland Radio's Mega Summer Draw. You'll have a number of chances to win, of course. Every Friday from the 11th of August to the 1st of September, we're giving away $2,500, and that's not all. On the final Friday on this show, we'll be drawing a ticket. One of you who buys a ticket will win €10,000. So if you want to be in with a chance, go to highlandradio.com. Click on the draw link and answer a simple question, and then tune in every Friday to find out if you're a winner. The earlier you buy your tickets, the more draws you're in. That's the rub, isn't it? Tickets are a tenner, but the more you buy, the cheaper they get. So you can group in with other people, buy them yourselves, but please only do it for fun. And if it's well within your means, of course. And the thing about this competition, because there's others running all the time and some of the tickets are really quite expensive, is the amount of people that enter and your chances of winning. So I'm not promising that you are going to win, but I'm saying it's about scale. So you could you're in with a good chance. Better chance than perhaps other ways you could be putting your money. Now, Active Retirement Ireland says 94% of its members would like to see the establishment of an independent commission for ageing and older people. The finding is among the results of a member consultation in March and April of this year, for which 437 people took part. Now, Maureen Kavanagh is CEO of Active Retirement and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Maureen.
Good morning.
It is great to have you on the show. Now, Active Retirement is calling for an independent commission for ageing and older people. That's been backed up by its members. And speaking to older people, and we've talked about this on the show before, and we shall in the future, there is a sense older people are feeling left behind, underrepresented, a problem, no planning for them. Now, doesn't matter what age anyone is listening today, they eventually, God willing, will become the older people that we are talking about. Is that what your organisation feels?
Yes, our members across the country, and we have 450 active retirement associations all over the country, and our members do feel left behind. They feel that they're not listened to. They feel quite concerned that there is no plan in place for anybody as we all get older. And for many years, we have worked with the government and will continue to do with the Minister for Older People. But even that position, the Minister for Older People, is a minister for state or a junior minister. And also it's a joint role. It's Minister for Older People and Mental Health. So we really do need ageing and population ageing to be taken very seriously. We are now calling for a commissioner on ageing and older people. We've seen that that position works well in Northern Ireland, in Wales, the UK. And it's an independent voice, and it's someone that could call the government to, bring them to task over plans or lack of plans for ageing. Now, population ageing, we know it's a worldwide problem, but Ireland isn't there. We're not in a crisis. We're certainly not, and our population cohorts of generations show that. But we do need to have a plan in place. And in 2013, the government developed a really, really good positive aging, national positive aging strategy, but it was never implemented. So it still sits there with no plan and no framework for implementation. And we do know, and our members talk about their experiences of being older in this country. So it's really, really important, we feel, as an organization representing over 20,000 older people, that there be a plan in place for aging.
Now, I mean, obviously, we could talk about the obvious ones we have, for an example, you know, in terms of maybe rural transport or access to it, the move away from cash, health, obvious ones that we talk about all the time. But I think a perfect current example is in 2023, we know that more older people now are living in rental accommodation. And we know the housing market in this country is changing. Home ownership, like our parents and grandparents maybe enjoyed, is not necessarily for this and future generations. So a commissioner for aging and older people would need to start looking now about how and where older people live. You know, because once you retire, we know the pressures on the pensions, for example, you aren't going to be able to sustain high rents. So that's a problem then that would fall on the government's lap. So if we were serious about looking after older people and planning for the future, that would be a really important conversation right now and an important topic for an independent commissioner for ageing and older people. So in the absence of something like that happening, then we can't seriously say we are looking to the future in any meaningful way.
No, you're right. And there is no plan and there is no strategy in place for how Ireland becomes a good place to grow old in. There is, as I said, the 2013 strategy covered all the areas, every single area, and the determinants of what we need to grow old well. But it sits unimplemented and there is no framework. So if you're an older person, you know, there is no singular plan or in place. Equally for us as we get older ourselves and for many generations to come. And you're right, everybody hopes obviously to get older and we want to get old well and we want to keep active and we want to live in our communities. So this is the sort of plan that needs to be put in place to cover all of these areas. And we are going to be facing a crisis in the future of people going into their 60s and 70s in rental accommodation. That there isn't any doubt about that. And that cohort of people are becoming very, very vulnerable. And we have people in their 50s and early 60s now who are very, very frightened about what the future is going to hold for them, because there isn't a plan in place for housing. There isn't a strategy in place that will protect people to age well in Ireland.
Yeah, and there are different options in terms of housing as well. Because there's an awful lot of people don't necessarily want to be in a 4 or 5 bedroomed house either, that they would be open to other options. But we're not really discussing it, I think, in a grown up way or in a serious way. So how important is it then for have a standalone person? Like, what's the difference, say, for instance, an independent commissioner and an ombudsman? We know, say, for instance, the Ombudsman's for Children is very active and has really quite strong powers. So why are you going for an independent commissioner over an ombudsman, for an example?
Well, we had to look at both roles, and there is a place for both roles as well. There is a place for a commissioner and an ombudsman, but in terms of having a singular ask, and we consulted with older people and we looked at the role in Wales and we looked at the role in Northern Ireland and found that if it's well resourced and it's set up properly. And these in Wales, it's set up under the 2006 Act. So it's placed within legislation. So we felt that a commissioner would be possibly as a starting place to be the best position to go for, to have that independence, to have that voice and to be that champion for all of us as we age.
It seems a lot of these calls are falling on deaf ears. Do you think, and I appreciate the approach you're taking today, Maureen, but do you think it's time the likes of Active Ireland start rallying the troops to some extent? We've seen the influence older people can have when they're organised and you know they get out into the streets, so to speak. Now, I'm not saying we're at that point yet, but do you think we are getting to a point whereby the older person's voice needs to be heard more strongly, which is all of our voices? Again, I don't want to separate older people out from the rest of the population, because you know it is, as I say, if we're lucky, ahead of us all. But do you think we need to sort of start pushing this to the front of the agenda as we approach an election? Because the nicely approach doesn't seem to be working too well.
No, and look, Active Retirement Ireland has put in its pre-budget submission to the government on various different areas like the pension and on the call for the commissioner. But what we will be doing is we will be supporting older people to use their voice in the upcoming local elections and in the general elections when they come to the fore in the next year or so. So, and we will have a plan in place on how you can use your voice, write to your local TDs, ask questions on the doorstep. And that's how we will work in empowering older people to use their voice. But it is very, very difficult. It is. But older people still vote. So we will be actually rallying the troops in that way.
Yeah, because what upsets me, and I will go to the obvious one of health, if that's okay, is that sometimes it upsets me that older people sort of give in to it, if you know what I mean. They go, well, I'm not going to go to that facility because I'm not confident I'll get A, B or C. You know, and so rather than getting, and maybe that's why we have to advocate on their behalf where necessary, rather than sort of saying, right, enough is enough, you know, people are almost waving the white flag and going, there's no point trying to get a GP's appointment, or there's no point, I don't want to sit for 14 hours in the ED. Which is very saddening. Yeah. I find that very saddening.
Look, all of us are faced with those issues when we have, when we try to get medical attention for ourselves, and making that up our minds. Do you actually go into A&E knowing that the system is not working properly in there, and it's not the staffing, it is the system that is wrong.
Yes, for sure.
And it is a concern. So again, the more than housing, health is an area that impacts on all of us. But as we get older, we have, you know, generally we do tend to need good health facilities more. Mm. So that's another area that needs to be challenged and really addressed. So many, many areas of government policy need to be addressed that include health, that include retirement, that include pensions, incomes, transport. And these are the same areas that impact on everyone. So yeah, it is in all our interests to make sure we have good plans and strategies.
That's so true. And, you know, we do need to, I think, sometimes lose the them and us attitude whereby, yeah, oh, well, I haven't been in hospital for 10 years, so that doesn't bother me. Or, you know, I've got a job, so certain rates don't affect me. We do need to sort of start thinking more, I think, as a society rather than sections of it. Okay, well, listen, we hope your calls do not fall on deaf ears, and we do really appreciate your time today. Have a lovely day, Maureen.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself. Okay, that is Maureen Kavanagh, CEO of Active Retirement. If you've got a view on that, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. A lot of interest on a new documentary featuring a final interview with Gerry Conlon before his death showed his anger that the British government had locked away files on the wrongful imprisonment of the Guildford Four. Mr. Conlon, who died from cancer in 2014 at the age of 60, gave a final interview for a documentary on the Guildford Four, Birmingham Six and the Maguire Seven. He said a number of those involved in sending innocent people to prison had been promoted to the highest echelons of the British state by the then Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. The human rights campaigner from Belfast also said those who had watched as the Guildford Four were tortured and convicted without evidence had been protected. No investigation has ever taken place. He told that RTE documentary In the Name of Gerry Conlon, which will be aired tonight on RTE1. And the reason I mention that is I know there'll be a lot of people out there with a lot of interest in that. That is tonight on RTE Television 1, its name, or In the Name of Gerry Conlon. Right, back to some more of your comments here. Question out there: with some tablets and brands scarce and chemists giving out different brands, companies, especially blood pressure tablets, is this safe? Heard of people this doesn't work for, they need the original tablets. Well, normally a GP will make that call, because we've talked about this and I can say it with a degree of confidence. A GP, often what happens is the pharmacist will contact the GP or send the customer back to the GP and say tablet A is not available. Is tablet B, C or D suitable for them? It's not ideal, but I certainly don't think, or I know that the... in certain, for certain medicines at least, that the pharmacists aren't just going, oh, we don't have that, here's this. Hi, Greg. Had a baby bat in the house this morning, got it out, but don't know what to do with it. Would anyone know anything about this? So what can you do with a baby bat? It flew into the house. Maybe it'll find its way. I don't know. What do you do with it? Is it just sitting there? What's the right thing for that person to do with that baby bat? Myself and my wife were in a hotel on Saturday when we ordered our drinks, only be told they don't do a dash anymore. So a small bottle of white lemonade was €2.80. When I said, you'd done the dash last week, he said, it's a new policy. Now, no more dash. We have had one drink and then we left, went to a pub where they gave us a dash and no charge. Plus our drinks were €3.26 cheaper. Hotels, in this caller's opinion, are a rip-off. They also go on to say a taxi around town used to be €5. How is it €4.80 once you sit in the car? Then by the time you reach your destination, it's now €9.50. Rip-off Ireland is in full swing. I have a bit of sympathy for the taxi workers, to be honest with you, because they are faced with huge charges and it's tough to get around big towns too. The days of a €5 fare are over, of course. But yeah, that hotel potentially shooting itself in the foot by not doing the dash, because the two customers dashed to the pub next door and saved some money on the booze there as well. All right, okay, we're going to be talking about Gardaí, or potential trainee Gardaí, effectively being sent home from Garda training because they've got tats. Should they have been? Right, so a number of young trainee, well, I don't know what age they were, but a number of trainee Gardaí starting their basic training at the Garda College in County Tipperary haven't gotten very far after falling foul of rules against tattoos. They were sent home to get them removed and can reapply when this is done. They shouldn't be visible, we're told. Christy Galligan's a former Garda sergeant, joins us now. Christy, how are you getting on?
Good, not too bad. Great, how are you?
Good to have you on. Right, this is a bit harsh in this day and age. There's lots of people with tattoos. Do you think the Garda, given the crisis, need to relax their views?
Yeah, it seems a bit harsh, all right. Even though it's in the code that no tats to be seen by serving members. The problem with that is the tattoo does not make the man or the woman. A trainee is a trainee, and I know in the Garda code and the dress code anyway that tattoos are not to be shown and you have to have a certain short hairstyles, etc., etc. We're talking about modernisation and the new policing model and everything else. There's been a lot of controversy over the numerous and myriad of issues in the Garda Síochána. This is just adding on to it and the frustration that people find. Now, you don't want somebody with coming in with maybe a love tattoo on his four knuckles in the left hand and hate on the right hand, something like that. Mm. Wouldn't be permissible. But I have an issue, though. See, many years ago when I was in the job, we had long-sleeve shirts. And the long sleeve shirts covered a multitude of things. I'm sure there were members who were serving at that time who had tattoos who came from the armed forces, either Navy or from the Army, who would have had tattoos, and they were covered by long sleeve shirts. Now, with the new Garda dress that they have, or uniform that they have, is all short sleeved, and I'm sure there are serving members at the present moment out there who have tattoos that are showing on their arms or forearms. And what do you do about them? So it would be seen as a very discriminatory type of thing to put in place against young trainees when they are looking for young trainees. There are so many trainees or so many people that we need in the force at the present moment, and to discriminate maybe it would be seen as, it seems a little bit harsh.
It might also be a little out of touch, because what is the public's perception now of tattoos? I would find it hard to believe that there's anyone listening to this show that neither doesn't have a tattoo themselves, or their children have one, or grandchildren, dependent on their age. And in the booklet on Garda Síochána uniform and dress code, it says, in order to retain a professional image, all other tattoos and body art must be covered while on duty. They say that tattoos and body art on the face, which I kind of get, all visible above the collar, are not permitted. Yeah. But, I mean, is that in touch with what the public think? It seems to be saying they're doing it for the public, but it seems... I don't know the answer to that question.
The difficulty here is, I mean, if anybody watches any series on television, I'm sure people do, in relation to UK policing or American policing or anything else, you will see guys with tattoos fairly well dotted along their forearms and arms, and even going on to part of their hands. It doesn't stop them from being good police personnel. It's who they are. It's part of their dress code, I suppose. It's part of who they are. And it is the part of who people are nowadays to get tattoos. So I don't think taking in a policy like this, it's so strict. I wouldn't agree with it being anywhere on the face or above the collar of the neck. I think, yes, on the forearm and arms, yes, there is not a problem. I wouldn't find it a problem as long as it's respectable. But I don't think that bringing in something like this is doing any favours for the job, in a part when they're talking about modernisation in the Garda Síochána.
But the reality is, too, Christy, it probably won't change until someone is sent home and they challenge that decision because their tattoos are for cultural or religious reasons. And then all of a sudden there'll be this big panic not to offend anyone, and the rules will change. Why don't they be proactive before that happens and just say, look it, this is of bygone times. It's rarer now to get someone, it seems, without a tattoo.
I agree with you totally, Greg. And yeah, I agree with your statements totally. I think at the end of the day, it's another issue that can and could be challenged. When we talk about a lot of the equality issues within a public service or even private service, we're talking about equality issues. Are we going to discriminate against people who have tattoos on their arms when they're looking for a job in a public service? Is Garda Síochána the only ones now who discriminate against people with tattoos? It's a backward step in some ways when we're talking about modernising a police force. And I think we need to look at that again. And I think, you know, with all of the issues that are happening, the myriad of issues that are occurring in the Garda Síochána in relation to rosters, resignations, people walking out. And I heard recently of a case in where a trainee in Templemore who came in with his man bun was asked to, you know, sorry, there is a regulation, short haircut, walked out again. I mean, do we need to be that overly strict when we are looking for recruitment, good recruits, people who are willing to put their lives on the line for us and who are out there to protect our safety, to introduce these very, you know, discriminatory type practices?
I don't know. If I was in Bother and I'm dialing for the guards, I'm not going to be too worried if they've got an anchor on their forearm, to be honest with you. What do you think about this current conversation about policing, in that you would swear that Ireland was the most peaceful country in the world, and all of a sudden tourists are being targeted violently in the capital? I can't believe, as I say, the coverage and the conversation seems to be happening in a vacuum. There are assaults, public order offences on the streets of our towns and villages right across the country. We got one guard from the recent batch of newly qualified Gardaí. We need to be having a national conversation about public order and assaults, and stop pretending it's a couple of tourists, and I wish them full recovery, in Dublin, that all of a sudden this is the problem. Because what's going to happen is Drew Harris is going to throw all his resources to keep the media off his back at a problem in Dublin, and it's not really telling the story of what's going on in this country, I don't think.
Well, actually, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was writing a piece this morning for the press in relation to that, the very thing that you're speaking about now, Greg. And I agree with you in that respect, that, you know, throwing a 10 million into an overtime bill just for a short period of time to fill a gap is a sticking plaster in the wind, pardon the pun. But, you know, there are assaults in every town and every village. Well, not in every village, but every major town and urban area all over the country, most week and primarily most weekends. We don't have the frontline patrols that we should have, and dedicated frontline patrols that we've always seen and taken for granted for years in this state. And the fact is, I've looked at a number of CSO surveys there in relation to assaults. And, you know, not just Dublin, and unfortunately the focus is primarily in Dublin. It's not just Dublin, but it's the rest of the state as well. Like
We have a reactionary, we seem to have a Garda Commissioner that is driven by headlines rather than, like, say, for instance, there was an awful situation in Letterkenny recently, a couple of instances. We had an assault in Ardrah. We had a vicious murder in South Donegal. Like, if we were to follow the pattern of what's happening in Dublin now, there's an extra 8 Gardaí in Ardrah, there's an extra 25 Gardaí in Letterkenny, there should be an extra 30 guards around. That's not how it works, that's not how you police, but that's what's exactly happening in Dublin. There's been 2 assaults, which it's quiet time, so the press are all over. Very serious assaults, and this is no disrespect to those that were assaulted, and it has to be cracked down on. And now we have millions upon millions of euro being thrown at this problem in Dublin, and that's not a good use of resources. And I think the public need to say, hold on a second now, you're trying to pull the wool over our eyes here.
Absolutely, and I agree with you totally. This is only a sticking plaster over an emerging wound, and it's getting bigger all the time. And it's, you know, you're sticking your holes in a dam that's about to burst at the present moment. And it is, you know, the figures come out in relation to the number of the guards versus a pro rata per population or per county that have been shown recently. And it's not a true reflection of the actual resources that are needed on the ground.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, so I'm going to ask that question now. Donegal, fourth or fifth highest amount of Gardaí per head of population. Where are they? Why do people feel that there is a shortage of guards on the ground in Donegal when, according to those stats, we're in the top 5 counties per head of population in the country? Yeah. Where are these? Is it because we're so geographically spread? Is it because they're on desk duty? Where are these guards? What's going on there? Because the perception on the ground doesn't seem to align itself with those stats.
The big problem, and I've seen it, and I'm speaking to serving members all the time, Greg, and they're telling me one of the things is the bureaucratic the mess or quagmire that they're left in at the present moment in time. They're sitting in front of a pulse system, uploading all the time every incident that occurs. There is members who are now assigned to specialist units, the extra specialist units that have been mandated by this commissioner and the government, has taken frontline uniform members off the street and put them into those specialist units. So therefore, we're down huge numbers of personnel already. I would love to know, actually, because when they talk about 468 members in Donegal, it is disingenuous for the government or for the Minister for Justice or for the Garda Commissioner to suggest that at any one time you're going to have 468 guards patrolling this county at any one period of time. That is a lie, and one that has to be challenged. For every unit, like the units in Letterkenny or the units maybe Gador or wherever, Glenties, you might have one sergeant and two guards. You might have, in this county, what has a population of 166,000 people, you might have 30, maybe 40, maybe maximum 50 uniformed members covering a county of this size. This is a huge county with a border. It also has a huge coastline, a major fishing industry. It has a large rural population. So you're asking a small amount of resources at any one time and any period of 12-hour shifts to cover that. You know, it's about time the truth was told, what the actual numbers are at any period.
Well, what is the number? Are you saying 40 or 50 active Gardaí across Donegal at any given time?
It could. I'm saying it could be. I'm not saying it is. It could be. Because when they're talking about figures of the number of guards on duty at any period of time, they're including people who are in offices. They may be including specialist units like friend scenes of crime who are going to scenes of crime. They're not talking about your actual front line, on the patrol, on the beat members. Do you understand me?
Mm.
So you have to exclude all of those specialists and even your community policemen, policing units, who are not actively on patrol, but are doing community policing work, if you know what I mean. If you exclude those, the numbers then are quite minimum that are actually on patrol. And that's not just for Donegal County. That's for every other county around the country as well. So let's get the reality. What needs to be known is how many actual members are actually on patrol and a 12-hour shift each day. If that was known, people would be scratching their heads. And I think there needs to be answers.
Yeah. Okay, well, who answers those? It seems to be the knives out for Helen McEntee. Now, I don't know. She doesn't seem to be a darling of the press, but the knives seem to be out for her. Is that justified, or is it the Garda Commission?
Maybe to some degree. Greg, you know, photo shoots are not reality. Photo shoots are photo shoots. If you're walking down the street with senior officers on Garda Síochána down Dublin Street after assaults, it doesn't do. What it tells the public is, this is primarily a photo shoot. It has nothing to do with actual policing itself.
Mm.
You know, and it's 15 minutes of fame or 15 seconds of fame or whatever you want to call it. What we need to do, and it's not just at Helen McEntee. There's a policing authority as well who are constantly interviewing commissioners, etc., over policing structures and etc. and management.
Yeah.
And what are they doing? We have a commissioner who is surrounded by senior officers who I think have lost touch with policing. We were a proactive policing force involved in community consent. We're policing by consent for the community. You've lost a lot of that in the last number of years with this new policing model. We've lost it. We have brought in a policing model from abroad. And the policing model from abroad, be it America or even the UK, but America primarily, it's really governed by armed police forces. We're not an armed police force.
Of course, it's not the first time, because we also, say even with the ambulance service, we've employed a system for distributing the ambulance resources.
Yeah.
That is of no use. Maybe it is in an urban environment, but certainly not in a rural environment. Now, we're seeing Garda calls being triaged in Galway, so we're losing that local knowledge.
Yeah.
things are, you know, what people, I think it's what the public feel. The public are very, very rarely wrong. The vast majority.
Yeah.
If you ask the vast majority of people, they feel that that sense that the Gardaí are there with them in the community, that have an understanding of it, that local knowledge. This is no disrespect to those that work in those areas, but they feel that that is being downgraded. They feel less safe. That's not effective policing. And that's in this part of the world. And then, of course, then now we've got all the attention over what's happening in Dublin, which, again, I think is distraction. It's distraction, really, from the real issue. So, in other words, you put 10 million in there, an extra guard in Dublin, and that fixed the problem with policing in this country. It's nonsense. It's ridiculous.
I agree with you totally. I mean, it's only to fill a gap for a short period of time.
You say
it doesn't
a sticky
fix
plaster.
The problem.
All right, yes, before I let you go, a caller says, what about facial tattoos? I would not like to see a guard with facial tattoos.
No.
I think, really, there'd be a consensus that that is perhaps a bridge
too
far.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with that at all. No, no. Nothing above the collar, nothing on the face, nothing on the knuckles of the hands either. But, I mean, tattoos in general on the arms or forearms, I wouldn't have a problem with.
Yeah, apparently, a listener says you can also wear long-sleeved shirts as well. It's not just short sleeves, but listen, in the summer...
Yeah.
Well, if you can, well, why are these ones sent home then?
Well, that's a question you have to ask the hierarchy in Templemore and Garda headquarters. I mean, they introduced a lot of this stuff. A lot of it's fairly archaic and old stuff out of the old Garda guide, which was fairly strict at the time. And it really hasn't been updated, and it needs to be updated, you know, to keep in touch with the times we're living in at the present day.
Thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Christy Galligan there, back with more after the break. Okay, if you've texted into the show, stay right where you are because we'll be getting to those as this morning wears on. Don't forget, after 11, our Monday focus will be remembering the terrible Omagh bombing 25 years on. We've a number of guests lined up. If you want to get involved in that conversation or share your memories of that time, please feel free to do so. We are joined on the programme now by Ciara McChrystal from Derry, who's fundraising for a new sports wheelchair. And this off the back of her selection for the Northern Ireland wheelchair basketball team. Ciara, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping? It's great to have you with us. Right.
Oh, good. How are you?
Great, great. Congratulations on your selection, by the way. Fantastic.
I've been selected, yes.
Oh, okay.
On the process of it. Be a long, long, drawn out couple of months.
Well, hopefully someone's listening now and they'll feel they'll have to select you because I said so. Now, you're just 20. You're a young person, 28, but at 22, you were diagnosed with MS. A bolt out of the blue, I presume, was it?
Really, really out of the blue. They came in and they just said to me, oh, you're having another MS relapse. And I was like, what? Hang on. Where they thought I already knew. So, yeah, very, very out of the blue. I had symptoms and stuff, but I didn't link them to anything major, anything serious.
2 years later, then, you lost the ability to walk unaided for the most part, and that's when you became wheelchair bound, but continued very active.
Tried to be, yeah. I'm a scout leader up in Craigan in Derry, and I enjoy like kayaking and horse riding and things like that. So I do try to keep as active as possible. And obviously, they've all been able to adapt all those bits and pieces for me in terms of off-roading things and special aids with horse riding and things like that. So I'm lucky enough.
Brilliant. But you got a particular love of wheelchair basketball. Tell us how that came about. Sorry, you've muted there, Ciara. Someone might be calling you. That often happens. Sorry. You were telling us, Ciara, you were telling us about how you got your love of wheelchair basketball.
Yeah, I just messaged the local basketball team in Derry, the Northwest Wolves are there. Not a lot of people do know about them, to be honest. So I messaged them to see what way it all worked, if it was possible. And I went along to game day where all the local teams in the Northern Ireland League have all met. And I just watched it and I fell in love with it and gave it a go one day. And along that time, they were starting up a women's Northern Ireland team. So I thought I'd get on the extra training and try go there and bits and pieces, and it all just kind of snowballed.
Brilliant. And you were doing this in a secondhand chair, which wasn't designed for you. So that in itself created complications for you physically, didn't it? I mean, you were able to compete and compete at a level, but because it was someone else's chair effectively, it's not properly suited to you and the strains of that sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And it has caused some injuries in the past. I've got a few hand injuries and things like that, and sort of the sides of my legs and stuff are not sitting properly. So I just think now moving forward, because this new chair hopefully will do me a long time in basketball. I hope to be playing basketball for the next couple of years. With the Wolves, the next sort of 10, 15 years at least, that this will be the chair now. But unfortunately, disabled sports creates a lot of complications. We can't just buy new trainers and whack away. So, the new chair will be measured to me and help me sort of be more comfortable whenever I am playing and stuff. The old chair was brilliant whenever it was fit for purpose. But now I do want to be in this sport long term. And I know that now. So it's time to take the training wheels off.
Yeah, that's okay. And that means that you are bidding, as you say, to make the Northern Ireland team. You've also got one eye on the next Commonwealth Games. The old chair is not really up to scratch for that. So how can people back you, back your efforts and support you in buying this new chair? Because as you say, it's £6,500, so it's not cheap. And you're fundraising for that at the moment. So if people want to sort of have a stake, so to speak, in your future international career, how do they support you, Kira?
It's been amazing so far. And I created a GoFundMe page. And it's shared on Facebook, on GoFundMe website and all the rest. And that's really propelled it. I've been so lucky. The people of the town and random people who I've never met before, I've never even heard of before, have decided to give me a wee bit of a chance, which is incredible, and donated to the GoFundMe. Some are anonymous, so some I'll never know who gave me that chance, and others you can put your name to it as well, so that I can sort of personally thank everybody as much as possible. But GoFundMe has really propelled it, and I've just been so lucky and so grateful. It's been a really, really humbling sort of experience to go through it all, to be honest.
Brilliant. And we'll share the link on our socials as well. It's not only just for yourself too. There's definitely going to be a role in you showing others what's possible and inspiring others that might have a disability for a number of reasons. And I'm thinking particularly young people that would look at you and go, well, you know, I can see it, so I can be it. So there's a great piece of work you're doing in that regard too, Kira.
Yeah, we've been so lucky. This year alone, the women's Northern Ireland squad have been the first in Northern Ireland to go over to England and compete and get a full team together. And it is just, and it's not just for disabled people. If you have a brother or sister who's disabled and you're able-bodied, you can come along and play as well. Anybody can sit in a wheelchair. And you don't have to be permanently in a wheelchair. And the Northwest Wolves are there to help and support everybody to get into the sport and to fall in love with it. So if it gives somebody a chance, I always think you never know what you're capable of until you give it a go. Yeah. So it's all disability, all able-bodied, anything like that can come along to the Northwest Wolves and give it a go and see what you can actually do.
All right, interesting that actually. Okay, thanks so very much indeed. Kira McChrystal there, McChrystal from Derry. And as I say, if you hop on our socials, our Facebook and Instagram, we'll share that link if you want to support her.